dreams, and Jung, and you. I'm Emily White, and I come from Minneapolis, where I teach continuing education for women at the University of Minnesota, and do some counseling, Jungian therapy. And those of you who want to catch up on what I said last week can hear the tape. It's in the tape library. And I also urge you all to buy the book, Man and His Symbols, that's in the library. I dealt with the last chapter in Henry's Dreams last, I guess, Saturday. And for next session, I would like you to read the part on types, which is part of chapter one. That part is only a few pages, but it's very important. I'll recapitulate what I said. How many of you were here last Saturday? Anybody? Just two. Okay, well, I'll quickly recapitulate about why dreams are important and how to remember your dreams, and then I'll give you some dreams about that were analyzed by Jung that give some examples of how it's done. And first of all, it is important to realize that not all dreams are big dreams. Some dreams are just superficial dreams that may mean nothing or very little, and that they're sort of little dreams and big dreams. But the big dreams you will recognize by their strangeness and by the brightness. And if you keep track of your dreams, you'll recognize the symbols also after we talk about these for a while. From the diagram here, you can see that the, I don't know if you can all see this, but I drew it on the board anyhow. This little circle is the ego, which is what you are. People ask you what you are, where you live, and what your name is, and your consciousness. But that's only a very small part of yourself. Four-fifths of it is unconscious. Part of it is the personal unconscious that you can easily get hold of. And the rest of it is the collective unconscious, according to Jung. And that is not knowable directly, but it is very important because it contains all the wisdom of the ages and a lot of creative energy. And it's not, like Freud said, just libido or the id that has sexual meaning, but that's the reservoir of creativity. And archetypes, which are like molecules of energy charged with meaning and symbols, rise up from the collective unconscious and become visible in dreams. So that your dreams are like a mirror to the unconscious, and the only way you can really get to know it. And the unconscious can also be a guide because it is timeless and because it has all this power and energy stored in it. But because it is very irrational, we are afraid of it. So in dreams, it rises to consciousness as you interpret a dream, and only those things that you can accept in your consciousness will you be able to, only those things that you're not afraid of or can accept will have meaning. The others will remain bizarre, and maybe many years later they will suddenly have new meaning. In my own case, I've collected dreams for 25 years, and as I reread them, I come across a dream and suddenly say, aha, oh, that's what it meant. But at the time, I couldn't understand it. So they're kind of timeless, they're charged with energy, they're a guide, and they always seem to have a very special meaning in terms of mirroring your conscious. In other words, they give you the other side of yourself that you cannot see from your conscious life. Now, most of you dream every night, but most of you don't remember dreams every night. So you can suggest to yourself that you will remember them. And since I've been here, I've been known as the dream lady, and everybody comes up to me and says, hey, I had this fabulous dream last night. Some of them don't even want to tell me, but most of them do. As I said, the dream brings up symbols that are not bad. On the contrary, they're usually helpful. They're guides, And Jung wrote this book, Man and His Symbols, on the basis of a dream. He was up in his 80s and he had written many technical books. And he didn't really want to write another book, but he was approached by this man to write a popular book, because his German is really hard to follow, even for those who can understand German, and his English is not much easier to read either. So he was approached to write a popular book, and he said no, quite firmly. So then he had a dream that he was at a psychological gathering, and he was talking to people, and especially to a whole mass of uneducated people, expounding his theory, and they understood him. And on the basis of this dream, he decided to go ahead, and when he was approached a second time, this man had persistence, he did go and write this book, of which the main chapter is by him and the others are by his collaborators. It is a fascinating book, and it's in paperback. There's also this hardcover edition, which has the same illustrations, only in color. And it's probably as good a summary as you can get. Now, this portable Jung is a Viking portable that has some of the more technical things in it, and I'll be reading you some of these dreams from here later. So how do you remember your dreams? You decide that you want to remember them, first of all, and then most important, it's good to have a pencil and paper right by your bed, and to allow enough time, even after the alarm does ring, to remember them. They will float back into your consciousness, but you can't hop out of bed. Now, some people remember them while they're brushing their teeth and combing their hair, but by and large, it's good to allow a few minutes or 5 or 10 minutes to remember the dream as it floats back to your consciousness, and to write it down and then put it away. Look at it again later, or think about it and see what comes up, and see what the symbols mean. There are no fixed symbols. It's not like Freudian thing where a steeple is always a phallic symbol and a cave is always a womb or a feminine symbol. The individual symbols are quite different. I mean, the symbols are individual, and they mean different things to different individuals. But there are some more or less universal symbols, and that water is one of them. The water usually represents the unconscious. So if you're riding a boat on the water, it usually means that you're getting close to your unconscious. And if you're flying, it often means getting into the higher altitudes, or the intellect, or the spiritual truths. And I think those of you who were at the eye opener this morning saw the painting by Bruegel of Icarus, who fell into the water because his wings melted. He flew too close to the sun, which could be interpreted in Jungian terms, that he got too high from his earthly moorings, and he lost contact and thus fell into the water, drowned. Those are a few examples of the symbols. As I read the dreams, I will explain some of the other symbols that come up. Jung called those symbols archetypes. I put that on here. That's a term he got from Carl Burkhart.
The historian, Jacob Burkhart.
Jacob Burkhart, sorry. Yeah. Got Carl on my mind, you see. Anyhow, it is a symbol that is charged with meaning and has order and power to transform, actually, because it is so much energy in that symbol. An example would be a wise old man or a wise old woman giving you a message in a dream. Whenever you hear a voice in a dream, he puts a lot of emphasis on that, because he says the voice usually is very important in giving a message to the consciousness. Many times the consciousness resists hearing the message or garbles it, but usually it comes through. But sometimes names are used like puns, and numbers are significant, and shapes are significant, and depending on how much you reach, how big the dream is, how deeply the symbols come from, what layer. they will be more meaningful. When you do have a dream, then you can first of all look at it like a little drama. And it's a good idea to see where it takes place and at what time. Sometimes the time of day can be youth, middle age, and old age, or something of that sort. The time of day could be transferred to the time of life. Anyhow, the place is important, and the shape of the room. A circle is a very important symbol, and so is a square. Jung calls a square a symbol of wholeness. And sometimes we overlook that, so it's kind of neat when you say, I was in a room, to try to remember if that was a square room or a circular room. And of course, if you remember being in here, the question is, do you just remember being in here because it's a circular fireplace, or is it a circular room that has symbolic significance? But that would depend on the dream. Then you see what the characters are, and usually if you dream of somebody you know, it is not as symbolic a dream as if you dream of unknown characters like a wise old woman or a nymph or some stranger that comes into your dreams, because those stand for parts of yourself. And usually the people you dream about are aspects of yourself, and it's very important to understand what the person, even if you know them, means to you. And after a while, when you dream, you see what different people represent. I will dream very often of our priest, and he dies and then is resurrected, for example. Well, he stands for the whole spiritual aspect. And it's not about him in particular, but my own inner spiritual life. So we have to have the place, the time, the characters, then the exposition, what is happening, the setting, kind of. Then the plot itself, which can be very bizarre, it can be very short, can be very elaborate. Some dreams, that really depends on you. Some dreams have a whole dialogue and characters and a plot. And then usually they come to some climax. Something happens, something is transformed, something occurs, and then there is a solution. You don't always dream the whole sequence, but in the big dreams you usually have that, and that helps analyze them. Fragments are important too. Colors are important. By and large, blue represents the thinking function, which we will also talk about more on Friday, thinking or the intellect, and yellow represents intuition, and red is usually passion or feeling, and green, hope or closeness to the earth. All dreams are important, but as I said before, some dreams are more guides than others, are more helpful. And they're usually stirred up at times when you're emotionally in a state of transition or crisis or big events. Let's say what you dream before you get married or before the birth of your child is more likely, or around that time, not just necessarily before, is likely to have a lot of meaning because the depths of your unconscious are stirred up. These are the big times in your life. And they always have a compensating function. They show the other side of your psyche. In other words, there's a dark side in each one of us that we don't own, but we all have it. And the dreams very often stir up this dark side. And so some of them are frightening. But most of the time, it's valuable to know that aspect of yourself that you aren't conscious of most of the time. And as I said before, the symbols are individual, they're individual and they're universal, but they have to fit, it has to click, and your subjective association to the dream is more important than what I could bring to it, though my intuition can bring some aspects of mythology perhaps, or fairy tales, because the same symbols are used in fairy tales and in myths. And that's why it's also important to tell your children fairy tales and myths, because these symbols are so universal and they carry some of the vital information of of all of humanity.
I was thinking of an almost humorous parallel to the problem of what the dream means. And let's look at this above the fireplace here. This is made by a person who's a student of mine at the Minneapolis College of Art and Design in Minneapolis. And Michael Baumeister, his father is here recently, and he's one of the Seminex people. I don't know what it means. When I first came here and saw it, somebody told me it was a crown of thorns. Another person told me that it was the community of us all joined together. Why did he paint it brown? The traditional thing in art is the artist has more power than my whimsy of interpretation, and what Michael intended sort of carries authority. But artists are sometimes wrong. As we live with it here, it's possible that we will... You could say it means anything, but I'm a sort of a conservative person. I like something to have meaning, and not just an abstract design, especially here at Golden. So, in a way, you are the artist of your own dream, Emily is saying, it seems to me. So you have more power over what it means, as Michael Baumeister has more power of what his intention was. But Michael Baumeister doesn't always have the last word. You don't always have the last word in your dream either, because this sort of a thing touches on ancient meaning, as your dream can touch upon ancient things as well. So the artist has authority, but he never has the last word.
Jim, yes. As a point of information, he thought himself, he said, that it was all the different people at Holden mm-hmm. making it a community. But as you say, it may be bigger mm-hmm. than himself, but that's what he mm-hmm. thought.
Yes, I had heard both when I came last week. And especially people who didn't have the inside information, what did it mean? So there, then he did speak with what I call his authority as the artist.
Yeah, he said that.
Very intensive, the sense of community. Well, which one of you is hanging up and which are hanging below?
Well, here's a dream at the beginning of a series of dreams that he discusses here, that Jung discusses and gives the meaning for. So I'll first read the dream and then I'll read what he has to say. The dreamer is going on a railway journey, and by standing in front of the window, he blocks the view of his fellow passengers. He must get out of the way, out of their way. And he interprets it by saying, the process of getting to know his unconscious is beginning, and he discovers that he is keeping the light from those who stand behind him, namely his own unconscious components. We have no eyes behind us. Consequently, behind is the region of unseen, of the unconscious. If the dreamer will only stop blocking the window of his consciousness, then the unconscious content can become conscious. So this is one of the first dreams he dreamt. Something else comes to mind, the railway journey. Any journey represents your way of life, and if you walk or bicycle, you're doing it pretty much by your own efforts. If you're in a car or a train, you're being carried along. And if you're flying, you're way above the ground, so you can interpret this as you go along. People often dream of being on a journey. That's part of the journey of life. What the road is like may be symbolic of whether you're going over a rough terrain or muddy terrain. Get stuck in the mud, I'm afraid it means being stuck in the mud. And if you go to the left, by and large, it means going towards the unconscious or downstairs. Going upstairs towards the consciousness. So, and many journeys up and down ladders is typical of what we go through in life. Now, here's another dream that is very interesting. I'll read these three dreams because they deal with the same symbol, the symbol of a hat. They're very short. First dream, the dreamer is at a social gathering. When he leaves, he puts on a stranger's hat instead of his own. Now the hat, this is the interpretation now. The hat as a covering for the head has the general sense of something epitomizing the head itself. And it often means bringing something under one heading, or in German there's a phrase, unter einem Hut, bringing all things together. The coronation also involves a crown that is put on the head. In the Golem, the hero puts on the hat of Athanasius Pirnath, and as a result, he becomes involved in strange experiences. It is clear enough in the Golem that it is the unconscious which entangles the hero in his his fantastic adventures. Encircling the head, the hat is round like a sun disk of a crown, and therefore contains the first allusion to a mandala. A mandala. The magic circle is very important in a mandala. We shall find the attribute of eternal duration confirmed in the ninth dream. And so I'll jump to the ninth dream and see what that has to say. Well, he has about 50 dreams analyzed in this book. I found it fascinating reading this afternoon. I wish I could share them all with you, but I want to have some discussion as well. Okay, we go to the ninth dream, and here it says, in a green land where many sheep are pastured, it is the land of sheep. Well, that isn't much of a dream. And here's what he does with it. This curious fragment, inscrutable at first glance, may derive from childhood impressions and perhaps from the religious nature. From Psalm 23, he maketh me to lie down in green pastures. The next vision points in the same direction. And he has another vision that's very similar. And then the 35th dream, and this is here again the hat image. An actor smashes his hat against the wall where it looks like this. Can you see this? Like a wheel with eight spokes. The actor refers to himself. Up to now, he has maintained a certain fiction about himself. He has not taken himself seriously. He must give up the actor, for it was the actor in him who rejected himself. The hat refers to the first dream, which I read to you, where he put on a stranger's hat. Now he throws the hat against the wall, and the hat proves to be a mandala. It becomes transformed from a hat into this abstract design, which is the beginning of a mandala. It has a circle and has eight spokes. So the strange hat was the self, which at that time, while he was still playing a fictitious role, seemed like a stranger to him. Now he can own his own hat as it's transformed. That's what you can do with a dream if you're Carl Gustav Jung. If you're Emily White, you have to sort of try and play around with the symbols. I should add that if you dream of a king or a queen, it often represents aspects of yourself. Each positive thing has a negative thing. You may dream of a witch or the devil or a warlock, which would be the negative side. And next time I will draw that on the board again. I'll give you the positive and negative of each archetypal symbol. But I think I've talked enough, and I answer your questions because I'll see where you're at. And
you said that each figure in your dream, each person, becomes sort of an extension of yourself, a part of yourself. But if you dream just dreams in which your husband, you are doing things with your husband and your children, don't they then represent themselves in that dream?
Yes. Usually, and that's why I said there are different levels of dreams that may be just kind of harking back to something you have done. And
those dreams seemingly don't have a lot of significance.
Well, they often are just recapitulation of what you have done. Yeah, they're less significant than those where you dream of strangers or where the plot is very bizarre or something completely unrelated to your daily life. But mostly they represent aspects of yourself. Yourself contains the masculine and the feminine, the wise old woman and the child, and a shadow figure which you cannot own, and what he calls the anima and the animus, which is in the anima is the feminine in man, the animus is the masculine in the woman.
Just before we came here, we saw a film made by Agnes Varda, a young woman in France, who's a filmmaker, producer, and director, called Daguerreotypes. The street she lived on, that's named after the photographer Daguerre. And these hardworking people there on the street, the butcher, the baker, and the counselor, the baker, and the tailor. And she asked them only two questions, how did you meet your beloved? And what are your dreams? And most of their dreams are, that they told her, were just a continuation of their work. And the butcher said, who was really superb to watch in the film, it just was so believable, his high standards in his little butcher shop there, that delicious French beef. And he said, I dream sometimes of giving a customer a bad cut of meat. Actually, the film I showed him sleeping in his own chair with his TV turned off there, one thing. And another fairly ugly barber with a face something like a frog said he dreamed of a beautiful customer coming into his shop. He said beautiful customer, and I don't know enough French to know whether it was a male or female form of that, but whether it was female. And so his own dreams, a variation in the sense of you dreaming with your husband and children, very close to the continuation of life itself during the day.
You mentioned the part about flying. Is there any interpretation as if you were a spirit or something looking down upon a scene, and you're part of the scene or part of the action, mm-hmm. but yet you're removed from it and just observing what's going on there?
That could be especially some people who are near death report coming out of their bodies and looking back on themselves. That could be quite possible. Yeah.
Do you work very much with becoming conscious during your dream and taking an active role?
I don't understand what you're asking.
Taking an active role in your dream, becoming actually conscious and working with the dream itself rather than being passive and letting things happen.
Oh, yes. In a Jungian analysis, you don't lie on the couch and just free associate. You sit upright, facing the analyst.
During the dreams.
Well, during the dreams, you're lying in bed asleep. It's afterwards that you become conscious.
But
I don't understand.
What aspect psychology that's becoming properly?
Oh no, I don't think so. If I understand you correctly, basically we just write down the dream and think about it consciously later.
Yeah. Techniques of becoming conscious in your dreams and actually interacting with them.
Uh-huh. No, I'm not familiar with that.
That's been spoken of often. I read a lot, well, not a lot, of that, and they most often if you've dreamt of falling and all of a sudden you stop on your bed and you feel, and I've read that if you feel yourself falling in that way, if you turn it into flight, you can actively change what is going on in your dream and turn a fall into a flight, and then a peaceful landing. Or, as you were saying, you often work out a fairy tale episode with a monster in your dream, and if you can turn and confront that monster in your dream, you can sometimes turn a nightmare into something maybe more pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be stopping in your dream
mm-hmm.
and performing an act.
Mm-hmm. Well, what you were saying about falling, that is a very common dream during adolescence especially, and it's a very typical dream of anxiety and of the body, when the body is changing very rapidly. And most people wake up before they fall. Very few people
are...
Before they land,
right.
I'm sorry.
Before they land.
Before they land. It's an awful feeling, this falling down. And it has something to do with the body growing rapidly, I believe, because it is a very universal kind of thing. But I'm not sure that I've ever been able to turn my dreams around the way you described.
Have they done much? You know, I think everybody's had a dream where they wake up completely exhausted
mm-hmm.
from their dream. I know they've done a lot with REM sleep,
mm-hmm.
watching the eye movement.
Rapid
eye movement. Have they done much watching the rest of the physiology after an extremely intense dream where you wake up and you have to rest?
No, but I think we should. I think there's a lot that hasn't been done yet. But the dream takes up such a small portion mm-hmm. of your sleeping time. That it really, I don't know what comes first, but I think it is one way to stay asleep. Now that is where Freud was correct. The dream keeps you from waking up completely, and sometimes you incorporate sounds and physiological things in your body into your dream, and certainly the old thing about eating too much before you go to bed will certainly give you strange dreams. But what it is you pick up out of your unconscious in your dream?
I frequently dreamed that I put some rubber bands around my feet and I can fly that way. And, you know, it has recurred many times, and mm-hmm. and the only way I could fly is put a rubber band about my feet and I could just make swimming motions and go on.
Do you feel the rubber band around your ankles?
Well,
around your feet?
I feel putting it on.
I see, yes. Yeah. Huh. Do rubber bands have any special meaning for you?
No.
It's not like our house where everything is repaired with rubber bands. Yeah.
How does sleep talking or walking enter the dream? Or does it?
I didn't hear you.
Does sleep talking have anything to do with your dreams? Or walking in your sleep?
It's sort of the outcome. I don't know much about sleep walking, no. But if you talk in your sleep, your dream is encroaching on your consciousness. And sometimes you can give voice to real words. Sometimes you're just mumbling. And sometimes you give away secrets. But basically, yes, it's part of the dream that becomes voiced, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's any more significant. I think it's just that it's closer to the threshold of consciousness.
You spoke of dreams taking a very small portion of your sleep. What about these dreams that you have the feeling have gone on and on and on endlessly?
Mm-hmm. And that sometimes,
still,
yes, yes, even so. When they have taken these eye movement tests and woken people up, they haven't lasted at most 5 minutes. But they could have dreamt that it lasted years, months. And that's the illusion. Because first of all, the unconscious is timeless, you see. And some things take a lot of time in your dream that in actuality are just seconds. I think that's marvelous to show the relativity of time. Another aspect of dreams is that they may anticipate what you're going to be doing, and they often jolt you and you say, oh my goodness, I dreamt about this. That is often a good sign to look back at the dream and see how important it is or what it says. I haven't investigated this yet, but I want to. I've collected dreams for 25 years, and there are some that definitely point forward, especially as I look at them from the back, you know, I mean, for many years later, I say, oh my goodness, I dreamt this back when? A good example is I saw a woman in a dream, and some reference to breast cancer, and it was dreamt 4 or 5 years before a good friend of mine had breast cancer operation. Well, is this anticipatory or not? Well, as I look at it, I say, oh my goodness, could be, could not be. But on a smaller scale, within a short span of time, they often do point forward, and it is good to look at those dreams because they often are very important or meaningful ones. Then there are dreams of ladders that I thought I'd like to share with you, and then we'll have some more questions. Here's a good one about a dangerous walk with father and mother up and down many ladders. Now, you're all familiar with the dream of Jacob and the angels going up and down the ladder. That is a really archetypal dream. It's like the ladder between consciousness and unconsciousness, and reaching up to the spiritual heights. In this case, he interprets it, he's walking with father and mother up and down many ladders. His childish consciousness is still tied to his father and mother. But the steps in the ladder point to psychic transformation, so that going up and down ladders are apparently often symbolic of transformation or changes in your psyche. Do you have any wise words to add to this, Jim?
Well,
No, I'm just thinking of some dreams, but I'm suppressing the desire to talk.
Well, this is
I had
good.
One dream that I really is an extremely disturbing dream, and I had it when I was 3 or 4 years old, and it was only when I was 20 or 30 that I realized what it was. My mother got rheumatism right after I was born, so she was extremely crippled, and yet she got pregnant. And I guess in these days, they may not have sent her to the clinic, but in those days she carried the baby. She was extremely thin. She was about 5 or 8 or 9, and oh, just a thinnest person. But anyway, I didn't remember her pregnant, but she was a real thin, they say, and had this big belly, and she carried my brother, who's an intelligent, strong person and all that. And my mother was very religious. She said it was God's will. And I had a dream again and again when I was a child, and it was a very strange dream. I was in the Holy Land. I was in a desert, and there were palm trees, and there was Jerusalem before me. And beside me, the strangest part of the dream, there was a female dog that was pregnant. And the belly was real big, but the nipples were real small, and it was a little child. I was worried, how can this bitch nurse these puppies it's going to have, because it was all belly and no breast. And this dream I had several times, and 20 or 30 years later, it dawned on me that it was my mother, because she was both devout and she was pregnant, and I couldn't handle it all. And I knew that ordinary women who were pregnant had big breasts and were stocky and so forth, but she wasn't. So that's I don't know what to make of it, but I'm sure my interpretation is right. And what it did to me was to reconcile both the beautiful and the physically shocking, all in one dream. Mm-hmm. And dreams are, that's to me an important dream, because our life is made up where the shocking and perhaps even the ugly and the beautiful are so intertwined, all in one picture.
Yes, that's the reconciliation of opposites, or the tension of opposites, is very very evident in dreams. And we often suppress parts. I do that quite often. Oh, I don't want to write this down. That's really unimportant. It's precisely those parts that maybe are the most important. And sometimes they deal with animals, and sometimes they're transformed into dreams about dreams, dream that you're dreaming, or that you're seeing a movie, or you're reading it in a book. What you read in a book or see in a movie may be very important. It may be something you really can't deal with directly, so it's once removed. And I found that to be fairly true in general. And,
Can a dream prepare you for something that's going to happen?
Yes, I think so. Jung found that to be fairly true, especially if you're fairly sensitive. I think there are degrees of being in touch with your unconscious and degrees of sensitivity. There's ESP, extrasensory perception, we don't know too much about.
I had a dream concerning my brother. Mm-hmm. At the time he was perfectly well. Mm-hmm. Then I saw him in a wheelchair, completely helpless. Mm-hmm. And 2 years later he was. Mm-hmm. And just a short time later he died. This fast sclerosis came. Mm-hmm. But I saw him in a wheelchair, and I never did forget that. But yet it kind of prepared me for what was coming. Mm-hmm. The same way I dreamt of people and saw their faces and then met them as much as 2 or 3 years later, and I recognized
really
from the dream.
I've heard this and I've experienced this. I had a study group in which a woman read me a dream that she'd had quite some time ago, in which we were sitting in the circle and there was I asking her that particular question. Well, she was a very sensitive kind of person. I assume that you are too, and that this is a way that you are warned or prepared in a dream. In the Bible, this happens all the time. But I'm always a little bit wary about this, because only very few people are that close to the unconscious or that aware of these forces. But it is entirely possible.
Well, how could it be your unconscious when it's something you aren't even, that nobody is aware of, like the person wasn't even sick yet or something?
Well, that's part of the, shall I say, mystery.
That's more like prophecy. Or
yeah. There's a lot we really don't know about. But I said the unconscious is timeless. Okay. So it particip- partakes of this, of the Spirit, maybe of the Holy Spirit. There's a book, Dreams, the Dark Language of the Spirit, is that it? Yeah, by Kelsey. And this is a minister who studied specifically the dreams in the Bible. And then he makes the point that the Holy Spirit speaks to us through dreams. Well, then that would be possible. But we have to be careful about that, because we tend to leap ahead. Most of us, it's as though a linguist, some people are linguists and know many languages, and most of us know only one, and a child is just beginning to learn it. In many ways, we're just children learning the alphabet. So we can't presume to know all the languages, but certainly when you grow up, many people can speak many languages. So in the same way, there are people who are dreaming up here and are able to really partake of this, and most of us are just learning the alphabets of dreams. I think that's important to keep in mind. Yes?
I would think one would have to be very careful with dreams, such as George's, to have a line between what you might interpret as prophecy and what you might consider simply an expression of one of your own anxieties.
Yes, exactly.
Dreams can also be a little like the Irish sweepstakes. The ones who win make the headlines in the paper, but the 10 million who bought tickets remain anonymous. And so when a brother dies, it becomes what I call the Irish sweepstake winner. Yeah. That dream is embedded in your memory forever, but if he had continued living a healthy life, it's possible you may have forgot the wheelchair dream.
Mm-hmm. Well, I never dreamt of his death at all, just at the
scene. It's possible, again, that he could
But have since remembered. He had other dreams similar, the chances are he has the ability to do to see some dreams. Yes?
Since you're speaking about languages, what do you think about dreaming in other languages?
Well, this happens quite often. It's kind of interesting. It would depend if you know the language and dream in the other language, or if you dreamt in a language you didn't know and got a message. Then you wouldn't understand it. So,
being taught a language while you're dreaming.
Yes, I've had dreams like that. In fact, I was teaching my husband Latin in a dream, or somebody was teaching him Latin. I don't know why. Might be very significant. I'll have to go back to that. But very strange things happen. Yes, but
is it true, somebody said to me, that you never dream that you yourself die? You never die in a dream?
That's what I hear. On the other hand,
I've had two dreams.
He had two dreams.
I was not only dead, but I walked around and looked at the coffin. And, well, they're very long dreams. I won't go into them now. But I personally have had very powerful dreams in which I was dead, and I not only knew I was dead, I walked around in complete circle, looking at myself from all sides.
That could, excuse me, to finish on that. That could be part of yourself that needs to die.
Oh.
Well, yeah, sure. We all have parts of ourselves that should, you know, be done away, or should be outgrown. So I think it is possible, if you interpret it then that way, as part of yourself. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
I was dreaming also, you say this now, some part of you has to die. I was dreaming about drowning, and it actually felt really good. I knew I was dying. Mm. And
did you emerge?
No, I stayed under and drowned.
Mm.
But it was a good feeling.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Well, that would be a good example, you see. It was a good feeling, even though she was drowning. Mm-hmm. So that
many times that's emerging consciousness from the unconsciousness. Mm-hmm. That's actually emerging with the larger self.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In terms of the diagram, you'd be merging with your unconscious, mm-hmm, there, mm-hmm, and it would be a good feeling. And in this connection, I would like to read this one dream, because it deals with going under the sea. In the sea there lies a treasure, and to reach it he has to dive through a narrow opening, and that is dangerous. But down below he finds a beautiful garden in the depths, symmetrically laid out with a fountain in the center. And that brings to mind the scripture where Christ says, I will give you living water, and it will well up within you as a fountain of living water, a fountain of a spring of living water. Yeah. And you see how close the scripture sometimes is to these dream images. And I think somewhere I read today that the scripture, and Jung was a Christian, but he came from a long line of Protestant ministers, but he did not accept traditional Christianity because he explored other religions and mythology as well. But I would say he is a Protestant, and a very liberal Protestant, basically. But the scripture and the unconscious are very closely allied, and the images that you find in the parables and that you find especially in Revelations are really archetypal images that he talks about. They're charged with energy, and your consciousness can unlock them, and you can get the energy back from them. And that's the value of dreaming, as well as, and more importantly, of reading the scripture, because there the truths are embodied in these symbols. And I think the book gives you some other examples of that.
So is that the purpose then of examining our dreams and trying to analyze them? Is to find those truths?
Yeah, I think so. To unlock the energy. There's energy is held locked in these symbols and the archetypes. If you make them conscious, you can use the energy. That's known as a transformation, you see. But it can't be used as long as it remains unconscious. And sometimes the reverse happens. And this happens to us often when we look at the cross, and it's such a powerful symbol. If we begin to take it for granted, we have made it too conscious. It's become too familiar. So we have to tie it back in with a rereading of the symbols or a reinterpretation of it to get a new meaning in it. I don't want to sound pagan here, but it is true that sometimes we begin to take some of the images for granted, and they can come alive again when you're stirred up emotionally, when you read the scripture with a new emphasis, or when a symbol like this comes up in your dreams, for example.
Maybe you should say this. Some dreams are the central Christian thing of being reborn. Others are bumper sticker slogans we put up on the wall, little slogans of how to live better. I had a dream of flying once, which I had several times, and it was what I call bumper sticker wisdom. I was flying around my friends, up and down and soaring like a bluebird and a swallow. They never paid attention to it. Emily and I talked it out, and it was my ego assuming I was so terribly clever. And they didn't see me as clever at all. So I call that bumper sticker, not a real heavy.
Yeah, I like that distinction. Some of them are more, what was the thing you said?
Reborn.
Reborn. Dreams of rebirth very often occur. Sometimes you dive in the water and come out again, or you're swallowed by a big animal. And the Jonah story is essentially a story of rebirth, where you're swallowed by the whale and then reborn.
What are the chances of misinterpreting the dream?
Well, that's again where we have to go carefully.
Can a dream just be just a dream?
Oh, sure. That's why I said they're little dreams, or Carol Nolte gave me this phrase that they use in New Guinea. They're something-nothing dreams. They're just, you know, dreams. But then there are dreams true, or big dreams. And they do have meaning, more meaning. So you're the judge, kind of, on that.
Aren't they more like, would they be more likely to be the dreams that you remember all your life?
Yes, definitely. You really don't have to write down.
You say, gee, I had a dream, and by the time you get the breakfast on the table, you can't remember what
that's
it
right.
is.
That just depends how seriously you want to go into it. It happens to be my profession. I'm really interested in it. Now I've kept dreams for so long, so that I sit down and meticulously write them down. What is to me always so surprising is that what I remember as I first write them down is often amplified as I write it. Something comes in almost from left field and I hadn't paid any attention, which is often the most significant aspect. Or when I look at it later, what I thought was the story of the dream was okay, but there was inside a little aspect that really was the clue that I had overlooked. Had I not written it down, I would have lost it. And it's a theme that goes through many dreams. One little example is For many years I would dream going to church without any shoes. And a lady last week had the same kind of dream. I just wasn't prepared for church. I was going inappropriately dressed. Many dreams like that. And then many years later I had a dream of the shoes being in the closet. I don't know exactly what that meant, except there was that theme again. It was in a different context, you see. But being inappropriately dressed is a theme that ran through many of
mine. It's a common dream because I sat with somebody at breakfast this morning and was just talking about how they always used to dream about going to church barefoot.
Yeah.
Just this morning.
Oh, really? How neat.
I used
synchronicity.
To dream that I would arrive at school and all of a sudden realize I was in my pajamas and just be, you know,
yeah.
just a terrible feeling.
It must be a fairly universal anxiety.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
I went to school without your underpants.
Oh. Yeah, I went to church many times in my dreams and my nightgowns.
Somehow you don't realize until you're there.
Until you're there, and it's
you.
So
and it's
embarrassing.
Too
it's too late.
But what makes that difficult for me is that is church merely a place of social conformity where we're well dressed? That's the problem,
that's
whether it's lightweight or heavyweight.
On the other hand, the scripture says you have to have the wedding garment to come to the banquet. And
I have one question about the symbol. Dreaming about animals that bite into you and you cannot get rid of them, and it's a very frightful thing. Is there any general explanation for that? Or
well, animals often represent the instinctual forces, your instincts,
mm-hmm.
and primitive tendency. And if the animal actually bites you, it's really grabbing a hold of you.
Mm-hmm.
And you should pay attention. Mm-hmm. You can't but help pay attention. It's saying, I'm very much part of you. Don't disregard me.
Can I?
Yes.
Now, last night in this room up here, I heard all this rustling noise,
mm-hmm.
and I was sure it was either a mouse or a bat.
Mm-hmm.
So then I dreamed that something was biting me. Now, should I interpret that the way you interpret her dream, or should I interpret it as that I was just terrified that there was going to be a mouse in there?
Well, what do you think? What do you think? Well,
I really think it was just my fear.
Yeah, the fear.
Because I've never dreamed
well,
that
you see,
before.
That's why I would ask you. This is a beautiful example. You had this actual experience and the actual fear the night before. So it was really right there. And so the chances are that your dream was a something-nothing dream, whereas her dream, I don't know what the context was on a deeper level, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So the same dream can mean different things.
I've had an interesting experience with dreams lately in which my unconscious is seeming to become my friend and protector.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have knowledge of an upcoming event,
mm-hmm.
which I am very uptight about,
mm-hmm.
Very apprehensive about getting to that appointment or that
mm-hmm.
date, and have all kinds of fearful fantasies about it. But I will have a dream in the meantime that will set the scene. And the whole thing runs smoothly and beautifully, and it's a delightful experience in my
mm-hmm.
dream.
Mm-hmm.
And as I approach that event, I'm much more relaxed, and when I get there, it usually works out just about like the dream.
That's very nice. Now here you see the compensating function of your dream. Consciously you're anxious and uptight, but your dream says, oh, it'll be okay. So the dream is like a guide, a little bit like Jung's dream here. It's a guide that says, it'll be fine. And it relaxes you, so then you can approach it in a better way, and then that helps it be really a better event. See, that's very nice. It's not always as clear, but you made it have a very clear example there.
You talk about energy in dreams. When you dream of suicide, then will you ever have the energy to get up and do it, you think? I mean, I'm always doing away with myself.
Really?
Thinking of ways, you know,
yeah.
to do away. And I think, would you ever have the energy to get up and
I don't think. I don't think so. Maybe you could interpret that one a little bit like the dying dream. Part of yourself has to be done away with. Part of it, whatever aspect, and you wouldn't necessarily or at all get up and do it.
Think about that during the day. Hmm? Well, no, I really have no reason to commit suicide. Every couple of weeks or every month, it's really a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm always thinking of the easiest, the less painless way to have to wake up. And it's really,
Well, it could be one aspect of yourself that needs to be done away with, whatever that would be.
Could you clarify one thing to me? I heard you answer a question a while back, and you said that you weren't really, or I don't know if you were speaking about young now or yourself in the school that you come from, but you said you weren't really concerned about what causes the dreams to happen.
Mm-hmm.
That just doesn't really kind of logically make any sense to me, because like what I keep hearing here is you know, dreams that are caused in adolescence by the fact that, you know, as they go to sleep, their muscles are relaxing, and that gives them that sensation of falling, and dreams that are caused by anxiety, by having to keep appointments and stuff. And it would seem to me that you would be very interested in what causes the dreams, because that would help you to go ahead and categorize and, you know, in terms of which ones are the important ones and which ones are just being caused by certain.
Yeah, you're right. But we know in some cases, we know fairly well what the relation is. Like in adolescence, there is a great number of falling dreams, so we can make this correlation. But we don't really know enough what the causes are physiologically. In fact, we just learned about eye movements very recently. Well, they've been going on all along. But the symbols are sort of timeless, and therefore we're more concerned with the symbols than with the physiological causes, okay?
Do the symbols seem to transcend cultures?
Yes, that's why they're archetypes. Though, like in the myths, they're flood myths in many cultures, creation myths. And they're that kind of symbols. And they're very powerful. They often have light and warmth associated with them. Thank you very much. It is 5:00, and if anybody wants to keep on asking some questions, I'll be here.